Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning Public Affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're going to open up catching up with a couple of representatives from the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter on this first weekend of Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. We're going to talk about the support network and services this organization provides for not only those grappling with the disease, but their loved ones as well. Then we're going to welcome a spokesperson from AARP into the studio to discuss a package of legislation that's winding its way through the State House in Hartford in these waning days of the 2019 legislative session that are of particular concern to AARP members and many others here across Connecticut. And then we're going to close touching base with Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut, reminding you about the many ways you can support this critical mentoring agency and how easy it is to make a life-changing difference in the life of a local youth by becoming a Big Brother or Big Sister yourself. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Well, you heard about it here on the program. The Connecticut State Police are partnering with Survive the Drive for this summer's Defensive Driver Training Clinic on Friday, June 28th at Lime Rock Park up in Litchfield County. For parents, this might be the one most important and memorable experience you'll ever share with your child, learning defensive driving techniques. Survive the Drive's hands-on Defensive Driver Training Clinic offers strategies coupled with performing crash avoidance maneuvers that could save lives. Survive the Drive is an independent, not-for-profit educational resource providing risk awareness presentations and hands-on defensive driver training to individuals, schools, and community groups. To register online for the upcoming safety course, just go to survivethedrive.org. Always great to catch up with old friends, young in heart, but old in terms of the amount of time that we have known each other, and that you probably have known her at some point in your history. If you watch TV here in Connecticut, Kristen Cassato is back, and she's right here in studio with us. She is one of the voices representing the Alzheimer's Association. ALZ.org is their website to find the business and activities happening in Connecticut. We're also pleased to welcome very special guest Dick Helstein, who is a caregiver to his dear wife of almost 50 years, who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. We're going to hear from him and get some backstory and some good advice from Dick in just a few minutes. But we do want to tell you, as the show broadcasts here on the first weekend of June, you're probably seeing a lot more purple popping up around the state. That's because June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, and Kristen and her team are turning the entire state of Connecticut purple to raise awareness about people needing to talk about memory loss and take their concerns to their doctors. And we'll be jumping off on that subject in just a few minutes. But in order to really form the best foundation, Kristen, for this conversation, it really is important to remind people how many families and individuals right here in Connecticut are impacted by this disease. A lot of people who are not and who may not know any close friends or relations may not think it is prevalent, but mm-hmm. It is incredibly prevalent.
It's interesting because you don't know anything about it until it completely hits you like a giant Mack truck. Hits the family, and what do you do? But nice to see you, John.
Yes, yes.
Thank you for having us so much to talk about this issue. Right now in this country, someone develops Alzheimer's every 65 seconds. So it's almost every minute. Back when I started this, it was, I think, every 73 seconds. We're losing seconds quite quickly. Right. But here in Connecticut, latest statistics are 78,000 people living with Alzheimer's disease and 178,000 caregivers. And I will tell you, those numbers are not totally accurate because a lot of folks have not been diagnosed.
Yeah.
A lot of folks just think, oh, this is typical aging. They're forgetting this, this, and that, and it's normal. It's not. Alzheimer's is not normal aging, and that's really something we really need to make sure we stress.
Yeah, and that's the fine line, too, because even myself, when I suddenly forget the name of the person who I've been working with or mm-hmm. interacting with for a long time, or a fact that I just related to somebody 15 minutes ago, right. I'm you get that momentary white hot panic feeling. Sure. But then we talk to medical experts who reassure us that, you know, part of the aging process is beginning to forget things. So your doctor is your best friend when it comes to determining exactly what's going on when you start forgetting things.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, you guys can go to our website anytime at alz.org/CT is our specific website, but alz.org, and you can find out the 10 signs of Alzheimer's. What are the things? And some of the things are, you know, when your memory changes affect your daily living, if you're not able to do your activities of daily living. And I liken it to things like you go in the car and you have the keys, but you're not sure what the keys do and where they go. And so it's not like you're walking out from a mall and forgetting where your car is. Good goodness, we all do that all the time.
Yes.
But it's forgetting what something does. It's a processing disease, essentially, because your nerve cells are changing and dying.
Yeah.
And there's amyloid plaques and dangles in your brain, which is heavy biology. We won't go into that. But it changes the way you process things. And your brain, essentially, throughout this disease process, shrinks.
Yeah.
So you're not able to remember as many things. So it's things that change the way you do things. When you're forgetting to, my mom forgot to shut the garage door so she wouldn't be able, or shut the main door so she wasn't able to wrap up the house at the end of the day.
Mm.
Simple things that are affecting your daily life. And I know that Dick probably has a number of things that his wife started forgetting where you're like, this is not right.
Yeah. Right. And what was so interesting, I'm really glad to be here because I love to share what has been happening, not that it's been an enjoyable time, but to help other caregivers to understand they're not alone.
Mm.
And basically for us, we had no Alzheimer's in the family. And so as I started seeing these behaviors, they were very different than simple forgetting, as you're talking about. She would have trouble with the checkbook, and she had been the one who balanced everything in the family financial. She would keep losing the same keys time and time again. And then she would ask me a question, and I'd give her an answer, and then she'd ask me the exact same question again. So I could see that this was not the kind of thing that we had seen before and was normal aging.
Yeah, random generic forgetfulness started to leave you as the fallback excuse.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And there are other things, you know, there's, you know, an ability to not understand time and place, and inability to realize what season it is. I mean, there are just so many different things. You know, a lot of affectation with speech, issues with speech, and calling something, for example, seeing a watch on your wrist and calling it something completely different, which is descriptive, like a timekeeper or something like that.
Sure,
so not knowing what the words are.
Yeah.
Depression. I mean, there's so many things.
The other thing is that Dick, your wife is blessed to have you, and as Connecticut's population ages, family members who could be caregivers drift away, and sadly, significant others, spouses, pass. And there's that segment of the population that Kristen talked about earlier who are early onset Alzheimer's or maybe even more advanced. And they don't have anyone close enough to them to be able to look at the 10 warning signs and say, you're checking the box on 8 of these, my love. We need to get to the doctor.
Yeah.
And one of the tough things is that the children then who become the caretakers or caregivers in this whole area, in many cases, they're just raising their family as well. So there's just so many pressures on them that they will miss some of these signs. And so it's so important for these people to have a relationship with their personal physician so that they can explain these kind of things. There's always been sort of a stigma attached to it, so people don't want to admit it. But it is just so important that they go up and give their doctor all these signs so that he can begin to understand and begin to share with them what could be best done for them.
Yeah, and sure. And Kristen, correct me if I'm wrong, but a member of the sandwich generation who is caring for young and old in their circle of family, they could take concerns to their own physician. They don't have to squeal on or give up their significant other or their parents' significant other. The conversation about the worry can really start with anyone, right?
The conversation, exactly. And I think that's what we're doing with Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. And it's really, it is time to take those brave steps to have those conversations with your loved one. And if not, definitely call our 800 number. 800 number is a 24/7 helpline that anybody can call at any time, and it's free. And it's all sorts of answers to any question you have about dementia. And I'll get that number. It's 1-800-272-3900. Maybe you can put that online afterwards as well. But that is our helpline. And if you have any question at all, hey, this is happening. Is this something I should be concerned about? From that to, hey, can I get a list of a neurologist in, you know, Cheshire? So there's so many different things that you can go. But what we're doing is we really want to push right now having these conversations, because early diagnosis is key. Why, you say? Because there's no cure to this disease. Why do we, should we have an early diagnosis? And I think there are so many things that you can do once you get a diagnosis of this disease. And Dick can speak to many things that they did as a couple and as a family. But in addition to that, you can help plan and be an active participant in the planning of your future. What do you want your health care to look like in the future?
Right.
Also, you can get involved in a ton of clinical trials. There are trials going on all over the country, including several here in Connecticut, to potentially, you know, work on something that may reduce the speed of your cognitive decline.
Sure, yeah. Right. We have some of the leading hospitals in the world, never mind in the country, right here within a 20 to 50 minute drive. Well, Dick, tell us a little bit more about, in your case, were you able to accept and embrace the diagnosis to the extent that you and your wife were able to make some solid plans that now, looking back on it, have been a godsend?
Absolutely. In the beginning, actually, we got misdiagnosed. We went into New York to a specialist who said this couldn't possibly be Alzheimer's. And one of the things that happens is, to the person who's suffering from this disease, it's scary. You're doing things that you don't usually do. You're suddenly leaving your keys in the refrigerator, or you're forgetting how to open a garage door. And so you really want an answer to this. And once we got the answer, we sort of sat there on the couch and just didn't know what to do. And one of the best things we really did is our doctor said, call the Alzheimer's Association. And they have this wonderful program where right from the very beginning, they help you emotionally. But we also had a group that we joined called the GAP group, which stands for Giving Alzheimer's Purpose. And there were 9 couples, all of whom had spouses who were suffering in the same way. And we've been together for over 5.5 years now. And in the beginning, it was really helpful to get education about what was going to be coming up. But at this point, it is perfect for socialization, because it's a group that you feel very safe with, that our partners were able to feel like if they didn't want to talk, they didn't have to talk, and really understood one another. So we are 9 couples who have been together throughout the whole time, go to restaurants, to each other's houses together, and really have a way to give Alzheimer's purpose.
And I think the support is really important, because of the fact that some of these folks have, you know, literally graduated past the point where they can spend time in the GAP group. Yeah. So it's still a support group. And then we have 90 other support groups around the state for people of all sorts of different caregivers. So not only caregivers and spouses, this, you know, child, adult children, et cetera. I mean, there are a lot of support groups. And that's the whole, a big point. I think you don't have to go through this journey alone. And that's what we want everyone to know. It hurts so much when you hear somebody say, boy, I really wish I knew you guys existed 5 years ago when my dad was going through this.
Yeah.
That's what we want to change. Hence the reason why we want to turn the whole state purple, John, so that people look up, why is it purple? Oh, it's the color of Alzheimer's. Here's why. Here's what we want to do. Here's our services available to you.
Yeah. And this passion of yours comes from personal experience as
right.
well.
Right. My mom was diagnosed at the age of 61 of a type of dementia called Lewy body dementia, which is not as common as Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is probably about 70% of the cases of dementia. So dementia is the overall umbrella term.
Yeah.
And then the different types include Alzheimer's and Lewy body and vascular, and they all kind of cause the symptoms of dementia.
Yeah.
So mom was diagnosed. I was in San Diego at the time.
Right.
I hightailed it back here to be with her and through the journey. And I always say it's either fortunately or unfortunately, but perhaps fortunately, it only lasted 4 years for her,
right.
and she passed away at the age of 65.
Taking her journalistic skills and applying them to changing the world when it comes to folks with Alzheimer's, Kristen Casado is with us in studio, as well as our new friend Dick Helstein, caregiver to his wife of nearly 50 years, who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's now several years on. And as you're hearing, some great kind of peer-to-peer advice available article from Dick. But we do want to remind you in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. You're going to be seeing a lot of purple going up. Maybe you want to put some purple on yourself to help raise awareness about people needing to talk about memory loss and take their concerns to their doctor. Your doctor is going to be, in most cases, although we heard a little bit of a nightmare story from from Dick, for the most part, your doctor is going to be your best friend in terms of making sure early diagnosis is performed. And if, in fact, the diagnosis is Alzheimer's, they can get you off on the right step. In closing, in the last couple of minutes that we have, Kristen, another thing that's happening in June is education of a different sort, and that is focusing on lifestyle initiatives to potentially reduce the risk of cognitive decline. Let's review some of those points.
Absolutely. So right now, while researchers are looking for a potential new treatment, or goodness, let's hope a cure someday soon, and there is 450 research projects going on across the globe to the tune of $165 million. So thank you all of you who have donated, because a lot of that money does go to research. But in the case of what can we do now, right? This is what folks of all ages are saying. What can I do now to prevent or to reduce my risk of cognitive decline? And there are several things we do know lifestyle-wise that do work. One of them is keeping your blood pressure in check. Big study that came out last year about that, keeping your blood pressure in check, helping to reduce your risk of cognitive decline. Also, things like everything that is good for your heart is good for your brain. We're talking exercise. We are talking learning something new, perhaps a new language, taking on a new skill, learning how to play guitar if you can. Dick's wife continued to do some tap dancing after she was diagnosed to try to keep her brain sharp, eating better, reading new things, getting enough sleep. Mm-hmm. There are all these things, and they're on our website as well, ALZ.org, to find out how you can try to get yourself real strong. Another thing, very, very crucial, social interaction. Keeping yourself very socially active with other folks. And I know Dick is a big fan of that as well.
Yeah, and we talked about how a lot of folks who are on their own that may have early onset don't have that social support network, Dick.
One of the best things to do then, too, it always feels like it's a stigma. You don't want to let people know. But there are people, we have people in our GAP group who still love to do things like fix up their house or go shopping. And this one person went to Home Depot and mentioned that he had Alzheimer's. He didn't keep it to himself. And he has seven people now who, as soon as he enters a Home Depot, will take him directly to where he should be going, tell him how to do it. And it's a way that he can keep doing the things that are important to him and keep up his self-worth in that way.
Excellent. Well, don't forget, we're going to want you to paint your neighborhood, yourself, your town, all of Connecticut purple in June as we celebrate and remember Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. Our guests this morning have been Dick Helstein, caregiver to his wife of nearly 50 years, and Kristen Casado, who is a fantastic spokesperson and shared personal issues with Alzheimer's. A great advocate, Kristen, and great to see you again back here in Connecticut doing the good work for the Alzheimer's Association. ALZ.org is where to go to begin your journey of education and information. Mm-hmm. And happy June. Best of luck in the celebration and work that you're doing and all the important research that the Alzheimer's Association is supporting. And we'll be talking to you again. Going back a long, long time, AARP has been providing us with great resources here on the award-winning For the People, and not just resources that are specifically for you if you're ready or past the point where you'll qualify for your AARP membership card and benefits, but for all folks across the state of Connecticut and beyond. Lots of important work, and as we've been learning over the past few years, getting a lot more involved and effective when it comes to state legislation. Anna Dorogazi is with us. She's the Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP here in Connecticut. From sharing practical resources to holding fun activities and events, AARP provides opportunities for you to connect and help build an even stronger Connecticut for everyone to live, work, and play in. So we're going to start talking about an issue that you've heard about on this program most recently, I believe, with the State Consumer Council, and that is the issue of third-party electric supplier abuses. There was an initiative in front of the legislature, and I guess we should caveat the show by saying that we're recording this in the final stretch of the legislature, where a lot of things start happening really, really fast. New things come into the picture. Things that have been in the picture a long time suddenly disappear. There's a possibility we may be talking about something on the program on the day that we've taped it that may be completely off the table by the time it broadcasts. So please keep that in mind. We're going to really be focusing on why AARP is backing these initiatives, whether they are poised to succeed in this session or may re-up again in 2020. So the first, as I said, is regarding third-party electric supplier abuses. So Anna, give us the background on that.
Sure. So first of all, thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here and really excited to talk about some of the issues that impact our membership, which is almost 600,000 folks here in Connecticut, but issues that really impact anyone over the age of 50. And I think any issue related to utilities or the issue that you mentioned of third-party electric suppliers is something that's absolutely relevant to everyone in Connecticut, but especially people over the age of 50 and especially folks who retire and are on a fixed income. This issue of what they're paying for their utilities is incredibly important. And we at AARP Connecticut want to make sure that people are paying rates that are fair and rates that aren't going to change a lot. So Connecticut has a deregulated electric market, which means that you have suppliers that can deviate from a standard rate. And these are the folks that might come knock on your door and try to sell you, some kind of plan that sounds really good, or you might get flyers in the mail for a utility rate that sounds really excellent. And you might think, great, I'm going to sign up for this rate, my bill's going to go down. And a lot of times that's true. You'll get locked into this initial rate that is better than the standard rate that the state has some control over. But what we see happening is that when that initial term of your contract expires, third-party suppliers are allowed to auto-renew your contract as a customer without your affirmative consent. So instead of coming to you and saying, we got you a great rate to start out, and now your rate's going to be really, really terrible, do you accept this terrible rate? They don't have to do that. They're able to roll your contract over from the good rate that you signed up for to whatever rate they want to set for you.
And I guess in a lot of cases, or as in many cases where a person signs up for something without a super amount of background and contact information, a lot of your members also were very, very challenged, if not infuriated, at the process by which they have to unstick from these suppliers.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And I think what we're seeing and something that we hear from our members and folks out in the community in general is that they get their electric bills and they don't understand what they're looking at. No one has really walked them through these electric bills. They are targeted by advertising that seems really good, but that they don't necessarily understand. And we know that a lot of the advertising for these third-party electric suppliers are targeted toward people who live in low-income communities, people who don't speak English as a first language, people who are seniors. So folks who are a little bit more vulnerable to begin with are oftentimes targeted by these suppliers, and we just don't think it's fair. So we are looking at this legislation as a way to make sure that the consumer has a better shot at paying a good rate. And we think that consumers need to be informed up front as to the rate that they're going to be paying moving forward, and that they need to consent to that rate.
I guess it's also important to reinforce the fact that this isn't boo-hoo. The legislature just found a worthy target for their ire and went after them. The Public Utilities Regulatory Authority here in Connecticut has already found fault with many of these suppliers and fined them millions of dollars, right?
Yeah. So I think our ultimate goal is to see this third party electric supplier market just go away. Mm. It's been regulated over and over and over since the market became deregulated. And there have been a lot of really major legislative and regulatory reforms over the last 5 years. And despite these settlements against various third-party suppliers, we're still seeing these abuses. As soon as we think that we've gotten on top of one piece of this market not treating its customers well, we might end a particular practice, but then another practice pops up. It's like playing whack-a-mole.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think our goal is to completely get rid of that third-party electric supplier market. But if nothing else, this legislative session, we just want consumers to have the ability to know what rate they're going to be paying.
Right. Yeah. And once again, to remind folks that may have just tuned in, we're with AARP's Anna Doragazi. She is the Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach. We're talking about a number of the moving parts that AARP has their hand on in the Connecticut legislature this session, some or all of which may or may not be dealt with by the time this program broadcasts. So I have to say, Anna, one of the other things that's been interesting over the past 10 years for me is passing from my late 40s into my late 50s and taking all these surveys and filling out all these forms where I'm now checking the next oldest or older box. And in fact, you folks have a little checkbox regarding age that AARP is very interested in possibly eliminating.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing this one up. So we are supporting a piece of legislation, House Bill 6113, which would prohibit employers from asking about date of birth or date of graduation on employment applications. So right now, there are already a lot of protections around asking people's age in a job interview, but there are other ways around it. So if you ask someone their high school graduation date, people do graduate from high school at different times, but you can do a pretty accurate mathematical calculation of their age based on that high school graduation date. And what we see is that workers, especially over the age of 50, experience a lot of discrimination in the workplace. And we think by making sure that date of graduation isn't part of the job application process, that workers are going to have a better shot at least getting their foot in the door for interviews and hopefully getting jobs. Because what we see is that for workers over the age of 45, 61% of AARP put out a survey and just tried to get a little information about, you know, what does the workplace look like for employees over the age of 45? And 61% of folks who responded to our survey indicated that they had either experienced or seen age discrimination in the workplace. And as Connecticut, and honestly globally, as we see this phenomenon of an aging population, we need to get ahead of this, and we need to make sure that workers who have decades of experience aren't automatically excluded from the job application process because of their age. So it's a pretty straightforward bill. We've seen great bipartisan support for it so far.
And I have to say, kudos to AARP for not moving toward this initiative as a standalone special interest, but aligning yourself with the Society for Human Resource Managers, who have also worked with you guys to kind of reinforce the fact that a lot of the information that you're looking to eliminate from employment processes and documentation is not needed.
Yeah, and there are some jobs where you need to have an understanding of a person's age. So you have to be a certain age to serve alcohol,
sure,
for example.
Yeah.
But that can come out later in the job process. You can verify that once you've been offered a job. But what we don't want to see happen is, you know, during that initial screening when folks are looking at job applications, we don't want them to kind of have a pile of too old to work here and maybe we can go ahead and interview them. We know that that's something that workers are up against. And we know that a lot of workers, you know, back to that survey that I mentioned, 44% said that they were asked for a date of birth, graduation, or another age-based question on a job application just in the last 2 years. Mm. And it's not fair until we kind of, as a society, get past this idea that older workers aren't contributing and aren't valuable to the workplace. We need to make sure that they have the ability to get their foot in the door and bring their valuable skills and experiences into the workplace.
Excellent. Well, as you're hearing, AARP is not just an organization that sends you publications and e-blasts about great deals and savings opportunities, but they also work equally hard, if not harder, on legislative initiatives like they're doing right here in Connecticut right now as we hit the home stretch of the state legislative session for 2019. We're going to come back and talk with AARP's Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach, Anna Doragazi, right after a quick break. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People for this first weekend of June 2019, right after this news. For the second year in a row, cities and towns across Connecticut are joining forces to present over 500 free outdoor musical events on Friday, June 21st for Make Music Day, a global music celebration on the summer solstice each year that brings people of all ages and skill levels together to make music. Businesses, buildings, schools, churches, and other institutions able to offer their outdoor spaces as concert locations, and any musician, amateur or professional, young or old, can take part by signing up and finding your nearest Make Music Day organizer at makemusicct.org. All right. Well, we hope you've been listening. We've been having a very spirited conversation with Anna Doragazi. She's the Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP here in Connecticut. One of the issues that is on the table as we speak, and the governor has vowed a veto on it, is the Senate approval of a family leave initiative. So, Anna, this is one of these tightrope walks where we're not sure what's going to happen, but basically when the governor says something that's passed is going to get vetoed, that's pretty close to a done deal, right?
Yeah, so paid family and medical leave is one of the issues that AARP Connecticut has prioritized over the past few years. I think you'd mentioned that issues that might not go anywhere one session, come back the next session. Yeah. This one's been reviving itself for 5 or 6 years at this point. And what we're hoping to do with paid family and medical leave, there's a really great coalition of organizations that support paid family and medical leave. And what this would do is allow workers in Connecticut to have up to 12 weeks of paid time off to deal with their own illness or injury, to provide care and support to a loved one who's experiencing illness or injury, to bond with a newborn baby, to bond with a child that they've just adopted or taken into their home through foster care. So for our membership, that caregiving angle is really important. We know that there are nearly 500,000 family caregivers unpaid in Connecticut, folks who are taking care of their loved ones and who are providing support that in a lot of cases is really critical for keeping folks in their homes as they age or as they go through illness. So where we are with this legislation now, the Senate passed a version of this bill. And the same day that this was passed, the governor earlier in the day vowed to veto it. It was a big surprise, I think, to a lot of folks. But he said, you know, I don't like the version of the bill that the Senate is going to be acting on. I don't think I can support it. And our understanding, you know, based on what the governor has said, is that there's an issue over who will administer the program for the state. Right. Will it be a state-run program? Is this something that we could open up to private insurance companies to run? So we're hoping that this gets worked out. It's too important of an issue to let it not happen again this year.
Let's face it. This is the closest it's come to fruition in the five plus years that it's been on the table.
Absolutely. And it's
so
an issue.
That's good news in and of itself.
It is. And it's an issue that so many people campaigned on, including the governor. This was one of his own campaign issues.
Right.
He said during the campaign, you know, we're going to get this done. And I think a lot of people trusted that and believed that. You know, and at AARP Connecticut, we're really hopeful that what we see is really these last few programmatic details are going to get worked out so that when caregivers need time off from work to take care of the people that they love, they can make sure that they're not going to get fired. That's an important component of this bill, that you're not going to lose your job when you're providing care or taking family or medical leave.
They'll keep their resources.
Yeah, keep their resources because
so many of these people are ALICE qualified, as United Way would say, not working poor, but one major emergency away from not being able to afford it. So the discontinuation of some compensation during the leave is a concern.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's true for people at any income level, that, you know, you want to be with your family. You want to, you know, support a spouse that's going through chemotherapy. You want to be there when you have a new baby and to take time for your body to heal and to bond with that child.
Good.
And a lot of people just aren't able to do it. And the choice is, you know, between taking care of their loved one and paying their mortgage. This will be great for folks in that position.
Well, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left for the last word on AARP's legislative initiatives for this 2019 session here in Connecticut with Anna Duragazi. She is Associate State Director of Advocacy and Outreach. My name is John Boquette, here with you as always these Sunday mornings on the award-winning For the People. Sometimes wish it was Saturday, but it's here for you on Sunday, and as well as online on iTunes, on all our radio station websites as a podcast. If you missed any of it or you heard a clip of it and you want to hear it again or share it, we're happy to do that through our radio station website podcasts or just search for the award-winning For the People on iTunes. An act concerning prescription drugs. This is something you're extremely passionate about, Anna.
It is. So,
and so is AARP.
Yes. And me individually and AARP organizationally. Mm-hmm. We know that in the United States, people are paying some of the highest prescription drug prices in the world. And it's one of the issues that we hear about from our members almost more than any other issue. Since we kind of took on this campaign that we're calling Stop RX Greed, we've heard from members who are saying, you know, thank you for doing this. I am rationing my insulin month to month until I get my Social Security check. We've heard from folks who are saying, you know, I'm cutting my pills in half, or I felt like my choice was, you know, manage my pain or lose my house, and I'm choosing to keep my house. So these really heartbreaking decisions that we're hearing from folks because prescription drug prices are so high and because they're going up and up and up, and especially for retirees on fixed incomes, it's just not sustainable. People are spending, you know, 25, 30, 50, 100% of their incomes on prescription medication, and something has to change. There were a lot of bills that we saw early on in the legislative session that touched on the issue of prescription drugs. And something that we're seeing coming to the forefront now that we know has the support of the co-chairs of the General Assembly's Insurance Committee, as well as the governor, is a big bill that looks at a lot of healthcare issues. And I wish I had a bill number for it, but I don't today. But one of the components of that bill is a drug importation program that would allow Connecticut pharmacies to import prescription medications from Canada. We're really, really excited about this because we know that drugs sold in the United States can be up to 10 times as expensive as the drug sold in Canada, which isn't that far away.
Right.
I've talked to doctors in Connecticut who have said, you know, I'll write a prescription for my patient and say, you know, it's going to be cheaper for you to drive across the border, spend the night, get your medication and come back than to take this down the road to, you know, your CVS or your Walgreens.
Yeah, but it turns poor people into literally, it is I guess it's illegal to actually do that. So as much as it may be done, especially in states that are closer to international borders of Mexico and Canada, it happens a lot. But still, it would be nice that Connecticut was able to be at the forefront of this initiative, which is also on the eyes and radar of AARP units in all 50 states.
Yeah. And we're seeing really great momentum in other states. Vermont took the lead on this issue last year.
Yep.
And in 2019, we've already seen Florida and Colorado pass this. So Vermont, Florida, Colorado, you have a very red state, a very blue state, a kind of purple state. We'd love to see Connecticut be the next state to pass this and to make sure that we're getting safe and much, much cheaper prescription medication coming from Canada and into our state.
Right. Well, as you're hearing, AARP is not just about the types of benefits that they can bring you directly. It's about supporting the advocacy that they provide at the government level. And we've gotten a great raft of that today from Anna Duragazi. She is Associate State Director for Advocacy and Outreach for AARP. AARP.org is the website you go to. If you'd like to find out what's going on in Connecticut, just put the search in for the Connecticut chapter of AARP, and you can get local with the organization. They welcome you to join, but of course, folks of all ages can benefit from the information and advocacy that AARP is doing right now, because trust me, folks, eventually you're going to be able to qualify to be with AARP. So may that happen for everyone. And in the meantime, thank you, Anna and AARP, for the great work that they're doing on our behalf in our state house and in Washington. Well, it's about time we checked in with Ellen Tracy. If you don't remember, she's been a great friend of ours here at the award-winning For the People, and she is the executive director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut. So if you want to find out about this organization, because they could really not just use your help, but just your familiarity with it, because maybe if you can't help Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut, you know somebody who can. You have a friend, a neighbor, a coworker who might be looking for a great opportunity to make a positive difference, either by donating to the agency or to become a Big Brother or Big Sister themselves. And also, hey, it's springtime, summer's coming. Spring cleaning is still happening all over households and businesses throughout Connecticut. And there are ways to make some donations and help clean out some of the higher quality and gently used items in your inventory to the benefit of Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So Ellen, thanks for joining us. A lot to talk about today. So let's go to the boilerplate. A lot of people probably think they know about Big Brothers and Big Sisters, but let's hear it directly from you, the most important things that they need to know about the organization as a whole.
Great. Good morning, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
So Big Brothers Big Sisters has been around since 1906, and it started in the judicial system when a fellow who was working in a court in New York City started to see, he was a juvenile court, and he began to see repeat offenders with misdemeanors, you know, silly trouble, nothing terribly criminal. And he made it a point to get to know some of these young men. And what he recognized is that they primarily came from single-parent homes. And the single home, the parent was typically a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it upon himself to approach the other men that were in his father's group in his church. And he said, we have a responsibility to the community and to these kids, of course. And on that day, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, actually Big Brothers, was organized. And we have remained true to the mission of serving kids who are at risk. However, it's been a long time since it's been just Big Brothers. It's been Big Brothers, Big Sisters since the 70s.
Yeah, and the temptation that would lead young people to risk has certainly grown from a molehill into a mountain as time has progressed.
Absolutely.
Since those early days when kids would steal a a candy bar or break a neighbor's window with a rock.
Right. That is so true. Yeah, there's our society, of course, is fraught with, all kinds of things that we could go on and on about. So it is hard for a kid to make his way. Mm. So the point of Big Brothers Big Sisters is to help that process along. And we match volunteer men and women with same gender. And this is after an extensive background check, of course, on the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an intensive interview process. Mm-hmm. The reason being that we want to match the right boy or girl with the right man or woman.
Good.
For a successful relationship.
Well, that being said, let's clear up a couple of other points that people may be wondering. Do the volunteers who hope to mentor and be a big brother or big sister have to come up with any money to become involved?
No, absolutely not. In fact, we discourage it. We emphasize low and no cost activities.
And,
because we don't want to confuse the child as to what this person's role is.
And they don't need to make some sort of a donation or pay any kind of fees to try to qualify.
No, absolutely not. There are no fees, obviously, for the families, and there's no fees for the volunteers.
Very good. The other thing that I think it's important to reiterate, as we do every time we talk, and that is that, to be completely transparent, there is a measure of failure or a non-connectivity ratio, and the adults who volunteer should not be discouraged, even if they get all the way to the point where they have two or three meetings with a young person and then suddenly that relationship goes away.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly no shortage of young people on the waiting list to get Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And sometimes you do need a little bit of kind of a honeymoon period, if you will, to
mm-hmm.
figure out whether or not this is going to be a positive and productive experience for both parties, right?
Right. Well, that's a very good point, John, that you're making, because one of the things that we know is that what sets Big Brothers Big Sisters apart from other mentoring organizations is what we call match support. So once the match is made, everyone is assigned a caseworker. And in the beginning, every time the match meets, they're required to talk to their case manager. And the point of that is to work through any issues that might be coming up and clearing the air. And our match support staff is just excellent in getting to know the matches very well and being able to read them very well.
One of the other things that it's kind of important to reinforce is not just the ages of the young people who are participating, but the fact that a Big Brothers Big Sisters opportunity is not just something for retirees or seniors. And I know you can talk about a few experiences that you have with people as young as, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old who have come to the agency. And due to their proximity and age with their big little brother or little sister, have experienced a very unique rapport.
Absolutely. Well, one of the growing trends in the last 5 or 6 years with us is more on-site programs. And these programs take place in New Haven schools and in Bridgeport schools. And the mentors are high school kids. So we have a case manager on-site with them and plans activities, but they also have the freedom to develop their relationship, sharing whatever interests they happen to have. But those in those relationships, the big, as we call them, benefits just as much as the little. They learn patience, and they build their resume, and they feel pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, and the ages of the young people who come into the program, 6 to 14, 15?
6 to 14, yes.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, once again, if you're joining us, Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut has taken mercy on your onset carpal tunnel by making their website very, very easy to access, BBBS.com. SWCT for Big Brothers Big Sisters Southwestern Connecticut.org is the place to go if you'd like to learn more. All of the information and every single potential question that you might have is probably going to be answered by quickly perusing their website. But also, it's a great website to share on your social page. Put it out to any of your friends on social. Maybe challenge them to join you to be a big sister or a big brother. BBBSSWCT.org to check them out. And the other good news is, if you don't think you have what it takes today to be a big brother or big sister, there's still plenty of ways you can help the program succeed. The first of which is by doing yourself a favor and clearing out all that gently used and quality stuff around your house and donating it, right, Ellen?
Yes, it's the perfect time of year, too. You know, we're all putting away our winter clothes and, you know, taking those things that we said in September that we'd be wearing and we didn't wear, well, it's time to, you know, give them the heave-ho.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about how you do that and your partner in that successful operation.
Okay, we have several partners, and we have several opportunities for people to give. Mm-hmm. They can stop by a Savers store. There's one in Bristol, there's one in Brookfield, Orange, Manchester, Meriden, and Newington. And whatever they bring to the store and drop off, we receive compensation for. So it's a win-win. You get rid of your stuff, and we benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a great boost to us.
Mm-hmm. You also have a few branded storefronts, right?
I'm sorry, what?
You have a few branded collection centers yourself?
We do. We have a site in Newtown, actually, at 129 South Main Street. And an organization called HelpSee is our partner there. And they are rabid about keeping things out of the landfill. So recycling. And so we join them in that effort. We also have a pod or two, one in Stratford at the Barnum Cutoff, and the other one is in North Haven on Universal Drive in the Barnes & Noble parking lot.
And
so
again,
anything that gets dropped off there, we receive compensation for.
Great. And once again, for more information about those opportunities and the locations, you can start at BBBSSWCT.org, the website for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut, or check them out on social. They're on a bunch of the social sites, including Facebook. So,
We also do home pickups.
Ah.
So in order to make that happen, again, unless someone has their pen and paper right with them, they'll miss this. But again, on our website, all this information is available.
Yes.
But to schedule a pickup, the number is 888-413-2227.
Mm-hmm. I think it's and there's a donate tab on the Big Brother Big Sisters website that can lead you to the information, or you could always hit them up on email through the contact tab. So in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Ellen, the final way that we can call folks who may either have done this circuit before or are brand new supporters is to come on out and play a little bit of golf on June 10th, right?
That's right. Monday, June 10th, New Haven Country Club. Our record is great for it to be a beautiful day, so you can count on that. And the New Haven Country Club, of course, is a pristine course, and unless you're a member of the country club, you can't play it. So we're offering you that opportunity.
Excellent. The vision of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Southwestern Connecticut is that all children succeed in life. They're a nonprofit agency. They match adult mentors age 18 and up to children that are recruited, carefully screened, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters also carefully screened and trained. Just go to BBBSSWCT.org, hit the donate tab or any of the other tabs to get all the information you need. Ellen Tracy, once again, has been our guest. She's executive director for the agency. Ellen, great to chat with you. Best of luck over the summer and with your recruitment, and we'll chat with you again soon. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.